Living Freedom of Speech Land. Welcome to Truth in Politics with your hosts, Andrew Bernstein. That would be me. And Bosch Faustin. That would be you, Bosch. How you doing tonight, buddy?
Excellent. Thanks.
God, I am glad to hear it. Let me get the chat up and running. Now we have a. By the way, before I introduce our guest, I think this is a really good topic that he's here, you know, to discuss with us tonight. Hey, I noticed a little tech problem with the chat. You know, there's been a lot of people who've been writing on there, but it hasn't been showing up on the show. So we'll have to get that fixed. So yeah, then we can. Because then we could talk with the people who make comments, and we go back and forth, and let them know that they're involved in the show, and that we appreciate their participation.
Absolutely.
So we'll get that fixed. Just everybody out there, you know, in free speech land, Bosch and I aren't like the most tech savvy guys in the world. Bosch is an accomplished artist. I'm a writer, you know, and a philosopher. But we get tech support. We'll get this resolved. Anyhow. Let's get to our issue for tonight, because we have on our show an exceptionally bright young man named Peter Seferian, who just graduated, a philosophy major from St. Edward's University in Austin, Texas. And we're going to discuss with Peter what it's like to be an independent thinking student in today's universities. So welcome to the show, Peter. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Andy. It's a pleasure. Bosch, just wanted to say, you know, it's a particular honor for me because, you know, you've been an inspiration to me in regards to Islam, and I really admire your courage and your commitment to principles. So,
again, thanks for having me. Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Glad to have you here. I appreciate it.
Say it over and over again. Bosch Faustin's a hero. Stands up for freedom of speech, even with death threats. You know, I'd be crawling into a bunker somewhere if I had a bunch of, you know, Muslim fanatics trying to kill me. But Bosch,
I don't think you would.
well, thank you. But anyway, so I mean, it's an open secret, you know, Peter and Bosch and everybody, it has been for a long time, that the American universities are dominated by leftist ideology, right? Especially in the humanities divisions. And so you were a philosophy major, Peter. So how did you, and you're an objectivist, so you don't subscribe to a Marxist worldview, to put it mildly. So how did you experience the philosophy classes and the humanities classes more broadly at St. Edward's?
So the philosophy classes actually are fortunately very, very good. The whole department is definitely committed to objectively presenting the material. It's not agenda driven. All the philosophy teachers are fair-minded towards all ideas and just want the students to understand each philosopher's point of view as best they can. Open discussion is tolerated and encouraged. But yeah, when it comes to the rest of the humanities, I mean, if you look at polling data, if you look at different studies that have shown that most university professors lean left, and they're primarily centered in the humanities department. And this is the same at St. Edward's. I mean, if you look at the classes that are offered that are probably the most prevalent in promoting this ideology is going to happen in the social sciences, women's studies, gender studies, ethnic studies. And that's where you get a lot of this new critical race theory that's being taught.
Now, is St. Edward's, is that a Catholic school?
Yes.
So is there still an influence of Thomas Aquinas there in the philosophy department and through Thomas Aquinas, Aristotle?
Well, in the philosophy department, yes. We definitely highlight those two. I would say it's in spite of the Catholic teaching, though, there, because these Catholics are much more influenced by the sort of modernist, Marxist-leaning Catholic orders that pervaded in the 20th century. The clergy there will go out of its way to, you know, promote things like LGBT rights, which is great. But you know, when it comes to things like Islam, they held up a sign on the student chapel after Trump passed his is immigration ban, and it's saying we stand with our Muslim neighbors. And yet, they had nothing to say about the suffering of their Christian brethren in the Middle East. So,
or in Africa, you know.
Exactly. Who are suffering at the hands of radical Islamists.
Yeah.
And so that gives you an idea of where these people stand exactly on these issues.
Right, okay.
Were they willing to discuss that? I mean, if you mention it to someone, let's say a student or a teacher or some activist there about their abuse of their own their fellow Christians, would they be willing to argue with you about it or defend it at all, or not really?
Honestly, I mean, I personally never brought it up with them. I didn't really have much interest in speaking with them, honestly, and I never saw anybody else broach the subject.
I hear you.
Well, I'm glad to hear that the philosophy department was generally, you know, in philosophy classes was open to intellectual discussion and debate and disagreement. That's great. Well, what about in the other humanities classes, in the literature courses, history? I imagine you probably didn't, you took as few gender studies or, you know, courses as you could. Well, you know, the race studies courses. What about the other humanities courses at St. Edward's?
So one of the courses I was forced to take in order to graduate, part of our Cultural Foundations program, as they call it, was a course called American Dilemmas. And American Dilemmas was basically just a way to spread and to educate students on social justice ideology. Mm. So most of the material they were assigning was blatantly anti-American. It was, we read things like Jacobin Magazine, you know, to get the Marxist angle. The textbooks that they were presenting that talked about sociology openly listed Foucault and Engels as their influences. And pretty much, you know, all the videos, all the material was from a left-wing bent. There was pretty much, aside from one video from Christina Hoff Sommers that she did for PragerU and one video of Milton Friedman, it was pretty much all left-wing. Not only that, but I would say we spent just as much time talking about how to perform certain activism than we did discussing ideas. Because there was one project we had to do called a civic engagement project, where we would pick out a nonprofit organization and volunteer for them in order to get credit, which was a mandatory project we had to do to pass the class. Now, some of these organizations were legitimate charities and nonprofit organizations that were doing genuine good in the community. But some of them include pro-union groups, obviously pro-union groups. And you would have to think to yourself, wait a minute, if a university was offering to give credit to students for joining, say, a Second Amendment advocacy group, or a pro-life organization, or a anti-eminent domain legal group, think of the uproar at that. But here you have professors and administrators openly encouraging students to do work for left-wing groups in order to get credit.
Okay. By the way, Stacy Case has signed on and said good evening to us. Good evening, Stacy. Thanks for joining us. So, Peter, let's say you or some other student, you know, spoke out in class and said, "Yeah, Milton Friedman, his arguments for capitalism are really good," and you know, and started to defend Friedman or, you know, other free market economists. Was the professor at least open to that, or was there a lot of hostility generated towards you? Did the professor try to intimidate you and the other students into silence?
So, luckily, this professor I had was pretty. He was a nice guy. He was open to hearing my point of view, but there I definitely could sense an air of hostility from the other students. It was mostly. You know, those who were, I was pretty much the only vocal opponent of what the professor was pushing. I could definitely feel this energy of sort of condescension, of anger towards me for daring to question their ideologies. I think the most memorable moment in class was when I was arguing with everyone else that there was a biological difference between men and women. And at that point, I decided to just cut my losses and just say, all right, I don't think I'm going to win with these people.
So they consider it controversial to claim there are biological differences between men and women.
Or it's just, or that it's just so obvious. It's like, oh, there's no differences between men and women, so why should we give a woman time off? Why should we ask women, you know, in job interviews if she's going to need time off for maternity leave, and we don't do the same thing for men? You know, honestly considering that as if there would be some question as to why we would treat the two differently.
But they want to believe all women. But they want to believe all women. So do they say also believe all men? There's no difference between men and women. I'm joking. But in terms of also your fellow students, he said there, you got some hostility, but did you gain some friends through, you know, debating with your teachers? Did you gain some allies? Did you gain some, you know, critical allies, you know, what to talk about today? But did you get some interest from people who were like, you know what, I agree with you, but they're on the down low about it. They're not maybe as open as you are to challenge your professors. Did you get any friends from them? Did you gain any, you know, interest from people who wouldn't speak out against it, but they appreciated that you did, let's say?
Yeah, so in the actual classes, I think in that particular class, I did talk to a male student who said, like, you know, I hate that class. You know, the teacher, you know, favors the girls over the boys. And that, you know, pretty much him and all his friends that were in the class, you know, didn't feel comfortable speaking out or commenting.
Right.
I didn't start to see other students tell me about this stuff until I started a chapter. Or I took over the existing chapter that was there for the student group. And at the beginning of each semester, I'd ask the students, you know, what do you think is your biggest challenge here? Do you feel like you're able to openly voice your ideas to your professors? Are other students tolerant? Are they open-minded towards you? And most of them say, no, I'm genuinely scared about social backlash from voicing my opinions. I'm scared that I'll be graded poorly because of it.
So, Peter, this was a conservative or a libertarian organization?
Yes. Young Conservatives of Texas.
So let me ask you, Peter, because there's so many horror stories, you know, true stories about cancel culture on the university's campuses today, directed towards faculty and students who have the temerity to speak out against the leftist dogma. Did you witness any firsthand at St. Edward's? I know it's a Catholic school, so it's probably less bad than the secular schools. I went to a Catholic college, and even though it was a long time ago, I know it was a lot less bad than the secular schools. But did you witness any firsthand, or your buddies in the club at the University of Texas in Austin? Do you know any horror stories firsthand that you want to, you know, horrify us with?
Absolutely. So the first story comes from one of my best friends who joined the club and was one of my officers. He was a communications major. And the communications department is essentially just another breeding ground for leftist ideas and leftist activism. So he was in a course, I believe it was called Leadership in Business. First thing the professor does is she turns on the projector screen, she pulls up a PowerPoint, and she starts saying, Donald Trump is a racist and all of his supporters are white supremacists.
Mm.
So at some point after, I think, three classes into this, he slams his fist down on the table and says, you know what, lady, this is ridiculous. I'm not taking it. And he storms out of the classroom.
Hmm.
He goes to the chair of the department and he says, hey, why is this teacher injecting her personal politics into this and calling all of her opponents racists? And the department chair said to him, well, it's just the way it is. That's just how we do things around here. So he goes back.
And this is in Texas. This is not in New York or Massachusetts or California. This is in Texas. Wow.
And the worst part is, so he goes, when he goes back to see his professor, she basically says, are you okay? You seem pretty upset about what happened. Basically, this sort of condescending gaslighting attack that she was performing on him, acting as if that he was the one in the wrong. He was the crazy one for objecting to such a horrendous, ridiculous claim. And she's like, well, I still got to write you up, but, you know, everything's okay.
Yeah, aside from the fact that it's just blatantly false, you know, to accuse Trump of being a racist and 75 million Trump voters of being white supremacists, when the truth is the hardcore racism in the United States today comes from the left.
Absolutely.
And it's not just it's anti-white racism. I speak out over and over again about its welfare state policies that the leftists have pushed for more than 50 years now, and they're still pushing, that have created a black criminal class that is by far the gravest threat to black lives, by far, by whole orders of magnitude. 90% of black homicide victims are killed by black criminals. It's their policies. You know, they don't care. They don't care how many black lives, black lives killed is just collateral damage to them as long as they win the battle for socialism. So it's not just, but it's worse even than false. You're right. It has no place in the classroom. That's her political views, free country, she's entitled to them. She can even, I'll even say class sometime. I'm going to tell you, this is my own personal thinking. You don't have to agree with me, but I want to check my own personal thinking. You could disagree with me. If she does that, fine. But she states this as her own personal opinion as though it's part of the course curriculum. She says that's just pedagogically dishonest. That has no place. Even if she's right, that has no place.
And what I've realized, especially during my last semester, was that it's not so much the overtly political classes that are spreading this kind of propaganda and indoctrination towards students, you know, political science or economics. It's mainly in these non-political courses where no one's going to suspect that someone is going to inject their personal politics into it. They're going to think, oh, I'm learning about leadership and business. I'm learning about communications. I'm learning about marketing, things like this. But it's these classes where professors will just subtly, or not so subtly, rant about their personal politics and try to get everyone to assume that somehow leftist politics are the norm here and any deviation from that is just crazy. So, like, I had a introduction to video game development course. The first day of class, the professor said, he's like, welcome to the class, this is, you know, history of video games 101. There are a lot of events in your life that are going to be difficult. For instance, the coronavirus, the Trump administration's horrible response to it, Black Lives Matter as a second civil rights organization. And immediately I'm just like, oh God, here we go. Then he asks three obviously female students what their pronouns are. I'm like, hey, this guy legitimately is on something called leftism. There were, a few weeks later, he's in the middle of a class talking about the difference between objective and subjective, the concepts. He's talking about, well, so an objective fact would be, you know, water is wet, the sky is blue, and if you don't wear a fucking mask, you're going to get a damn virus. And starts ranting about anti-maskers.
That's what he said in class?
Yeah. Right. And the worst part is, some of the students applauded him for that. So it's these other courses where they're trying to just inject their political ideology there and really sort of indoctrinate students that way.
Peter, did you ever think about walking, just quitting college at a certain point, or you were committed to doing the 4 years no matter what?
No, I halfway through freshman year, I wanted to drop out. But the powers that be, mainly my parents, would not allow that to happen. So I was like, all right, I'll stick it through and give them the best fight I can.
Absolutely.
So what about some of the students in the conservative club went to school at UT, right? They were at University of Texas at Austin.
Yeah, so it's a statewide organization. We have schools. We have chapters at, I think, over like 30 schools. So the major ones, A&M, Tech, UT, UTSA.
So I would imagine the University of Texas, you know, it's a state-run and secular school. I imagine it's more leftist than a Catholic school like St. Edward's. What was the experience of some of your friends in the conservative club who went to school at University of Texas? They have some horror stories to share?
Oh, yeah. So I would say the contrast. So St. Edward's was – the student population there was pretty tame. They didn't really seem that interested in engaging in politics or shutting down different student groups because it's so small and – I think they were just more interested in, you know, pursuing their own projects or hanging out with their friends and smoking pot. I don't know exactly what it was, but UT, since it's a much more densely populated school, you're going to have a lot more fiery personalities and fanatic activist students and professors. So one of the worst things I ever saw at UT was my friends at the UT chapter holding a protest in favor of, you know, allowing for due process during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. You know, there's no evidence yet to prove that he's guilty of sexually assaulting all these women. Let's give him a fair chance. They were swarmed by an angry mob of leftist students screaming at them, taking the signs out of their hands and ripping them into pieces. It was embarrassing, despicable.
Did the administration stand up for the rights of these kids to call for due process for Kavanaugh? What did the administration at UT do? That's vandalism. That's assault.
And I was arguing with people from UT about this on Facebook because I was furious about this, and they engage in the usual sort of gaslighting, confusing tactic, being like, well, if you think ripping up pieces of paper is a problem, well, then you don't know what assault really is. I'm like, oh my God. Because you know, the second a conservative would go to some BLM rally and tear up their signs and start screaming and intimidating the protesters, we'd never hear the end of it. But the left's reality is...
You might not survive it.
You might not... Right, exactly. But the UT administration didn't do anything about this. They didn't stand up for the students that were assaulted and attacked. And they didn't discipline any of the students that were guilty of that. Even though it's all in video, the whole thing.
Right. And by the way, let's acknowledge some of the people on the chat here. Bex. Is that Bex with a B as in boy? Bex Cummings? That's... thanks for sharing it, Bex. And Randy Kling said Facebook's got him on a ban now for 60 days total. I assume that's good for job. Speaking. Yeah, I assume that's for speaking out against the leftist orthodoxy. And Dan Patterson says it's a waste of time going to school. And even though I make a living teaching in a college, I'm becoming more and more, you know, to that conclusion. I think the worst thing about it, everybody, is... It's bad enough, you know, if we were, we were working in a store somewhere and we're disagreeing on politics and the powers, you know, and some of the employees, you know, were ganging up on, you know, on you to intimidate you into silence, whether it was the leftists, you know, intimidating the pro-capitalists, or if the conservatives did, and they tend to be much less violent than the leftists, but if they did it to try and intimidate leftists, you know, and the, you know, the owners of the store or the organization didn't step in and quiet it down, what they should do, look, you guys want to debate politics or anything else, you know, during your coffee break or whatever, before or after work, you know, feel free. It'd be bad enough if they didn't allow that kind of an atmosphere of open discussion of ideas or disagreement for ideas, even, you know, in a workplace, let's say, but in a university.
Yeah.
You know, higher education, the whole purpose of it is to develop one's thinking skills and to acquire knowledge in various academic disciplines. The purpose here is not to dogmatize, not to indoctrinate anybody with any political ideology, an objectivist, support of individual rights and capitalism. And it's certainly not to try to intimidate people who disagree. Open debate has to be a major part of education, especially higher education, when you're dealing with people who aren't little kids anymore and who could think. You know, they're 20 or 21 or 22, and their capacity to discuss their own thinking and their reasons for why, you know, has to be encouraged in every possible way. It's disgusting. It's evil to stifle anybody's freedom of thought, to try to intimidate them by physical force or lower grades, which I've seen in my own career and I've heard about in many cases, mostly from the left. Maybe there's some conservative teachers or professors who do it too, but it's almost always from the left. I guess there's so many more leftist teachers and professors, it would make sense that they'd be more, you know, of the abusers. But they're just more violent and more authoritarian than the conservatives are anyway, by whole orders of magnitude.
And that's the natural outgrowth.
It's despicable to do this in university. I'm sorry, Bosch, go ahead.
No, sorry. Just that's the natural outgrowth of leftism. They're authoritarians by nature.
They're Marxists.
They cannot compete with other ideas. They can't. In the marketplace of ideas, they're cooked. They're done. They have no shot. That's why they have to dominate. That's why they have to shut up. That's why they have to push this stuff down kids' throats. And Peter, sorry, going into college, your ideas about school, about college, I mean, no doubt they were colored by some fears about how leftist might be, but your ideas going in and what it actually was, how different were that, or you were pretty much wise to it going in about how bad it is, let's say?
Well, I always knew there was a leftist bias in colleges since probably eighth grade.
Okay.
As you know, towards the end of, during my senior years, when, you know, 2015, 2016 is when all of these insane college riots and breakdowns and anti-free speech policies were really coming to the forefront in the media. So
that was a hell of a time for you to go in. I mean, truly, that was a hell of a time for you to actually enter.
I know.
Amazing. So go on, sorry.
Yeah, well, exactly, because, like, you know, I'm going in being like, oh yeah, I'm going to learn some useful skills. I'm going to, you know, party, do all this kind of fun stuff that, you know, the college experience, Animal House, what our parents experience, right?
Really?
No. I'm really lucky that just St. Edward's, just by virtue of the fact that it's not the worst of them, that my experience wasn't as bad as my friends at UT or friends at any Ivy League school or most schools in the country. So the main problem I had with it is the fact that, you know, very early on I realized that, yeah, this doesn't really teach you any real applicable skill to apply to your real life. Especially in business, you know, I personally, if you're spending all day in the classroom just learning about business theory and about how other businessmen conduct their business and how they start them, part of that's good. But if that's all you're doing and you're not actually starting your own businesses and, you know, applying these skills in the real world, then you're no better than you were when you came in. You know, I had friends who were business majors who ranted to me about saying, like, how can we be entrepreneurship majors and we don't have our own businesses by now? Like, why aren't those the assignments?
Right.
So I quickly realized that, you know, most of the stuff I've really learned anyway since grade school has been through self-study, through intellectual curiosity on my own. Reading books, using the internet, going on YouTube, you know, finding actual university lectures and doing it myself. So, and then, you know, seeing these critical social justice courses firsthand were, you know, that was another reminder. I do think that the point of these critical social justice classes, whether they're ethnic studies, women's studies, the American Dilemmas course that I was a part of, primary goal of that is to create left-wing activists, create new left-wing activists. It's not about educating students in new ideas. If it was about that,
right,
the professor would be impartial, objective, and show both sides, present them fairly. You can just tell when you're in those classes that the attitude is, all right, how do you guys think we can become better allies? What can we do to ensure racial justice and equity? How can we be better practitioners of civic engagement? You know, one of my friends, when she was confronted with this obvious anti-capitalist bias coming from the professor, she asked a very reasonable question saying, well, what are you comparing capitalism to? Are you comparing it to Marxism? Are you comparing it to feudalism?
Right.
What exactly is the standard here? The professor said to her, oh, you know, those kinds of questions aren't really appropriate for this class, so I'm going to have to decline to answer.
Wow. That's blatant. Wow.
I mean, I think they should just call it St. Edward's Madrasa.
What an evasion. I mean, that's just a complete evasion, you know, of the reality of the way capitalism has advanced human life tremendously in terms of both political freedom and economic prosperity relative to the system she mentioned, that kid mentioned, or any other system you want to mention. Let me ask you, Bosch, Peter, you guys remember Susan Crockford? Does that name ring a bell to anybody?
The name maybe, but what was
this is a paradigm example. There's dozens that you could bring up, you know, of cancel culture, and leftist, what's the word? Like you said before about authoritarianism. They don't discuss, they don't debate, they can't.
No.
They have no argument. So they just fire. They fire her. Susan Crockford was a zoologist, I believe, PhD in zoology, a world-class expert on the polar bear, the Arctic polar bear population. I mean, world-class expert. And when she pointed out, the research shows that polar bear population in the Arctic, in contrast to the global warming zealots, the polar bear population has increased dramatically over the last several decades. The Canadian government banned hunting, which certainly isn't good for the Eskimos or, you know, the Inuit peoples, but it's been good for the polar bear population. Well, they'd have to be an endangered species in order to show that, you know, the ice is melting and the sea ice is melting and the polar bears, you know, are drowning or they're dying off because of it. She was an adjunct professor, one of the Canadian universities, University of Victoria, perhaps. We could look this up easily enough. Well, they didn't rehire her. She's a world-class expert in this field. Now, this obviously doesn't pass the smell test. The university, no, we didn't rehire her because she goes against the environmentalist orthodoxy. But, I mean, she's expert in this, and it's suspicious, and you see more than suspicious, it's blatant, and you see stuff like this over and over again in the universities. If you don't kowtow to leftist orthodoxy, you're canceled. Now, it sounds like this didn't happen, Peter, at St. Edward's, but for many of your buddies and your war stories there, it happened at the University of Texas, to the best of your knowledge. Anybody canceled, fired, not rehired, ostracized, students showing up at their house screaming because they didn't support Black Lives Matter or anything like that? In your experience?
I can't say anything about the canceling of students or the professors in that same direct sense that you're describing, but I will say that when COVID hit and the university needed to start making some cutbacks and the staff and start laying people off, one of the people they laid off was one of the conservative professors in the history department. I'm not sure how many other leftist professors were let go, but I think it's kind of suspicious that that particular person was let go. And after the last semester, another great conservative philosophy professor left the university as well. And I think part of it was because, per my conversations with him, I mean, I think he started to realize just how toxic the academy was becoming towards different viewpoints. So sometimes it's subtle. In the case of St. Edward's, it's subtle. At the case of UT, it's blatant. Like, we're in your face, we're gonna intimidate you if you don't shut up.
Let me give an example. I'm not even gonna mention the school name here because I generally have a good relationship with them. And maybe I could be perhaps a little bit cowardly about not wanting to get canceled myself. But they will know who I'm talking about. The administration will know who I'm talking about when I tell the story. Because this was in 2005, 2006. And, I was doing a lot of – the global warming issue fascinates me. The climate change issue fascinates me. It has gone back to 1988, when Jim Hansen at NASA started the hysteria over man-made warming. I've done a lot of research on this, and I realized right away that this is a lot of hot air. That the truth about climate change is climate change is overwhelmingly natural, only trivially man-made at most. Until warming is beneficial to life on Earth, and it's the colder periods of Earth's history that's pernicious for life on Earth. I want to give a talk, and there were people in the teaching school, the philosophy department. There were very good philosophy professors there who were interested in what I had to say. We wanted to put on a talk. The philosophy department wanted to put on a talk on the myth of man-made global warming. Well, I was going to speak, and my good buddy Paul Saunders, who's an objective scientist and really knowledgeable. We were going to speak on this issue. Well, the environmental science department went ballistic, and I'd already had discussions with them. I'm talking with the chair of the environmental science department. He's got a PhD in environmental science. I'm not sure how much value that has, in our day. And I was talking to him about, some of the world's leading, world-class astrophysicists, Vensmark, Abdusamatov, Svensmark's Danish, Abdusamatov from Uzbekistan, and Russian astrophysicists, world class in their field, who study the sun climate connection, vastly more credentialed scientists than the IPCC guys. And the chair of the environmental science department says to me, I never heard of that. Wait a minute. You're a scientist. I'm just a philosopher. You're supposed to be a scientist. These guys, and you're big on global warming. These guys are studying the sun climate connection. You never heard of them? Come on. Come on. Right. Do your homework. So anyhow, they went to the administration and said, we can't have Bernstein give a talk on, you know, on the myth of man-made warming. It will embarrass the school. It'll embarrass the school. You know, we have a consensus, the scientists. Well, the administration took that very seriously. And I said to them, wait a minute. If anybody's embarrassed, it'd be me. Because I would give a weak argument. And the environmental science guys, if they want, could show up in the Q&A and they could, you know, they could rip my argument to shreds. If anybody would be embarrassed, it'd be me. I said, the school will be, all the school has to say is, you know, we don't necessarily agree or disagree with Dr. Bernstein's stand on global warming, but this is a university. There's all ideas should be discussed, debated. You know, it's that's the purpose of higher education. No, they kowtowed to the environmental science department. They told the philosophy department, we can't do this. It might embarrass the school. You know, this is their attitude. They're either hardcore leftist ideologues or they're spineless, moral, craven weaklings who cave to leftist ideology. They know who I'm talking about. I didn't mention them. They know who I'm talking about. You know, if they watch this show, and they'll cancel me anyway, you know, whether, you know, I mentioned them by name or not. But this is what you deal with. This is what you deal with in the universities. This is 15 years ago. It's only gotten worse.
Only gotten worse, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Incredibly worse.
Peter, were there any teachers that you couldn't pinpoint ideologically? Were there any teachers that you said, you know what, I'm not quite sure where they're coming from, but they played it as straight as can be? Any at all?
Oh, yeah. It was mainly in the philosophy department because that was the most professional department and the only department in my immediate knowledge that was dedicated to giving students a genuine liberal arts education. So I had one professor who I could never figure. I didn't know what his political views were. Awesome. I didn't know what his personal philosophical views were. You know what? Yeah. I liked it that way because he was fairly and objectively presenting each philosopher, each one that we studied, whether it was Hegel, whether it was Plato, whether it was Kant, whether it was the postmodernists, it was Descartes. You know, we gave them all a fair shot, and he really did a great job of also sort of presenting their views in the way they would do it, in their own voice, in a way.
Right.
He was wonderful.
Excellent. That's great.
That's what a college class should be.
Yep.
Should be like. I've been teaching philosophy for many years. I had a student years ago, you know, in a moral philosophy class. We read Plato, we read Aristotle, we read Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount, you know, and then we Kant, Marx, Ayn Rand. We had a whole spectrum. This one guy said to me after the class was over, you know, he was an adult. He said to me, "Thank you, Dr. Bernstein, your lectures on Jesus and St. Paul was so inspiring. I started to go to church again. You know, I'm reading the Bible again." I thought to myself, oh, my God. but, you know.
You played it straight.
I did the best I could for the religious worldview, you know, because that's your job as a professor.
It ought to be. Know.
Yeah, that's professional. That's your professional responsibility. And I want to say, you know, and we've been discussing this, everybody out there. And I said, Deborah, Deborah Carcorso says that the schools, she's pointed out the schools don't want to educate, they want to indoctrinate. She has her kids, you know, her kids being indoctrinated, you know, in the schools right now. Deborah, I empathize. You know, I understand. But Deborah and everybody, we were, you know, the three of us here were talking before we went live about, you know, if I were teaching a philosophy class and I was filled with objectivists, you know, the kids were big Ayn Rand supporters, that'd be great. But, you know, I would welcome intellectual dissent. I think the students would too. But even if they didn't, I would make sure they treated the dissenter respectfully. You know, if somebody was held a Platonic metaphysics or they were Christian or you had a religious worldview or they had a Kantian, you know, theory of knowledge or a Marxist political theory, you know, I would welcome that. Let's discuss this. Let's debate it. Let's present evidence, you know, and logical argumentation based on observational evidence and made a more rational arguments, you know, win out. I would certainly welcome that. That's the way it should be in any any educational level, certainly in higher education, and too often is not in higher education. I think conservative professors are probably guilty of authoritarianism sometimes, but the leftists are the worst by far, by whole orders of magnitude. And you're right, Bosch. It's because, one, they hold the Marxist, basically Marxist ideology, which is totalitarian and, you know, and authoritarian of its very nature. And two, you're right, what you said, Bosch, they can't compete on a free market of ideas. I mean, if they really wanted to discuss their claim that white people are evil by nature, or white people are racist by nature, I mean, how long would that hold up to scrutiny?
Exactly right.
Anybody in this country, and most countries around the world, you know, if they live to be, say, they're teenagers, how many white people have they known in their life? Many. Right. How many white people have they known who are honest, respectful, morally upright, and trustworthy? You just start trotting out the cases. I can just start trotting out family members that I grew up with. My sister, you know, for one person, I trust her, you know, with my life. And I know any number of people like that. And the whole argument just collapses in like 30 seconds. It's garbage. It's intellectual vomit, and it's racist filth. And it can't stand up 30 seconds of rational scrutiny. So you're absolutely right. They can't argue. And so they have to be authoritarian. And no, they are. Peter, and congratulations to you, Peter, for surviving that. Congratulations for being
congrats.
Thank you.
You're
Because I went to a Catholic college like you did, Peter. It wasn't that bad. But I went to a secular graduate program, and I know how bad that was and how many times I had to just zip it. And once I got my PhDs, now I'm going to tell you what I think. And if I can't get a job, all right, fine, I'll live with that. But I'm done. You know, I'm done zipping it. You know, I wanted the PhD. I got it. Now, you know, now you ain't going to shut me up. You know?
Right, right. And you know, I really do feel bad for the students because most of the ones that are leftists are that way because they just don't know the other side. They don't know any better because the schools do not teach them basic facts about U.S. history, they don't teach them about the horrors of communism. They only teach them about Marxism in a positive way, about how it's going to liberate you from the oppression of the white capitalist heteronormative patriarchy. And if you know, they're incredibly anti-capitalist as a whole, I would say. And the problem is, though, that they don't know anything about capitalism. They don't know what capitalism actually is. If you actually were to ask them, okay, what is the dictionary definition of capitalism? They would give you totally different answers. It'd be mainly like, well, you know, it's sort of like the application of class, you know, beating down on, you know, the proletariat, and it's keeping us oppressed through patriarchy and all this kind of stuff. They don't know anything about how capitalism works, how basic economics work, how the history of capitalism, and they're just taught lies about basic American history, and it's just not good.
And that's saying, sorry, when you say, yeah, they tell lies, they have to. It's like they know their argument is built on lies. They know their ideology is built on lies. So they cannot allow the truth to have its day. They can't. They can't do that, whether it comes to others' ideas or their own. And knowing that they have to lie about it, it tells you that they know that they're part of something evil themselves. They know they're part of something rotten to the core. And, you know, people say, well, they might be sincerely arguing for their case. No, they're not. Because if they were, they would allow anyone, all comers, to challenge their ideas. If they were intellectually honest. But they're not. By nature, they're not. And they have to, you know, smear capitalism. They have to redefine capitalism. They have to vilify capitalism. They have to make it something it's not. Because if they were to allow the airing of capitalism as it is, then they're in trouble, intellectually speaking, you know, argument-wise.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not, I want to make it clear, like, I'm not against teaching left-wing ideas. I think you should hear all ideas that are out there. You need to understand how the world works and how different people think. But the way it happens in the universities is that, no, this is the ideology that you must follow if you want to succeed, that this is the truth. And any other scholarship that you might find outside of it is going to just be either rejected without any scrutiny it whatsoever or just ignored. So again, it's like they don't even know the basics about
you're right, Peter.
The good things about capitalism. I didn't mean to lump it
I understand what you're saying. Because in moral philosophy, moral and political philosophy classes and in intro to philosophy classes, you know, I'll teach Kant, and then briefly on Hegel because he's almost impossible to read. But then Marx and Engels, based in Kant and Hegel, and I would guarantee that I do a much better job presenting, Marx and Engels. Never mind, I do a much better job presenting Marx and Engels than the leftist professors will presenting Ayn Rand, if they do present Ayn Rand at all, or any pro-individualist, pro-capitalist. Never mind that. I do a better job presenting Marx and Engels than they do presenting Marx and Engels. I think I make a stronger case. It's shocking how often I come across leftists, including professors, who are basically Marxists, who know very little about what Marx actually wrote. Not even know the Communist Manifesto that well. Never mind Das Kapital. This goes back to the point we made before. To be objective, to be a professor and a teacher at any level, but especially in higher education, you need to be objective. You make the best case you can for these important. Marx and Engels are completely wrong. They're wrong about everything. Everything they ever said is wrong. I can't think of anything they ever said that's true.
Not just wrong, enormous, deliberately calling for violence against those with more than the rest.
Yeah, open class war, annihilate the owning class, which in capitalism, the owning class means, people who've generally worked their way up, through hard work and honest effort and creative thinking, as Ayn Rand points out in Atlas Shrugged. It's not like under feudalism where under slave system where you got wealthy by exploiting the serfs, brutalizing the serfs or the slaves. So you're murdering the best people in society, and Marxism openly calls for that. So, they don't know, these guys, everything they ever said, I think is false, but they don't know. They don't know the theory. I think I probably know Marxism better than they do. They're not interested in teaching, not even Marx and Engels. They're interested just in indoctrinating and turning out a bunch of little leftist clones who are thoroughly dogmatized and who are not capable of thinking critically and challenging what they've been indoctrinated with in the school system and then in the university. It's horrible.
And one more example on that. I mean, I remember being in a Zoom class, and I remember we were discussing, different paper topics, and one girl said something like, I want to talk about how, capitalism, involves the oppression through something that had to do with, COVID or something like that. And I'm like, you have no idea what capitalism is, do you? You have no idea what the definition is or the history or, just basic facts about it. And yet you're so confident in just spouting off these Marxist talking. No idea what you are.
It's emotional.
First of all, and these kids, they don't know. Like, I'll see my fellow students on Facebook, in their profiles, they'll say things like, this ironic, like, hello, prisoners of capitalism. Or, they're talking about, I heard one kid say something ridiculous. He was like, I'm not going to watch some capitalist movie, as if there's any movie that wasn't capitalist in the first place. But it's just, they are not intellectually curious people. They really seem to just accept whatever their professors put out to them.
So Peter, and you know, the St. Edward's philosophy department sounded like it was open to intellectual disagreement. That's great. You have buddies at University of Texas. So I wonder what it would be like. Maybe you have some insight into this. If one of those kids at UT, that's a major university, and it's Texas. It's not Columbia University in New York, with a hotbed of leftist ideology, has been for a long time. Remember, Bosch, you probably remember, they wouldn't let Netanyahu speak at Columbia, but the Iranian dictator, how do you pronounce his name? Was it Ahmadinejad?
Ahmadinejad.
They brought him in to speak. This guy was a brutal dictator. They had hit the Iranian dictator.
One guy asked him about,
they wouldn't let Netanyahu speak.
One guy asked him about homosexuals in Iran. He goes, there are no homosexuals in Iran.
Not anymore. Not anymore. We killed them all.
And St. Ed's wouldn't let a Holocaust survivor named Irving Roth speak, but they let the greatest Islamic apologist in academia today, John Esposito, speak.
Oh, man.
They wouldn't let a Holocaust survivor speak at St. Edward's?
No, because the Holy Cross clergy and the administration didn't like his affiliation to different you know, conservative Christian groups. So they were like, nope.
Maybe, and maybe because he was pro Israel also. Maybe was that part of it? Maybe
that was a crime. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It can't be pro Israel.
What was the best thing about College for you? I mean, what was the thing that you look back and say, you know what, absolutely was worth it. It was great being there, and you're going to take it with me for the rest of my life. Is there anything that, you know, that you can say it was really worth your time?
It was definitely meeting some of the great philosophy professors. One of whom I'm very close with. He's an open libertarian. From day one, I knew this guy was great because after one class, I overheard him saying to one of his colleagues, saying, "You should have seen their faces when I told them I didn't believe in social justice. They were horrified." And so being able to talk to him, and you know, he would have these, you know, secret philosophy club meetings off campus where we would just read purely, you know, libertarian texts. So nice. You know, people like David Friedman and Walter Williams and John Meadowcroft, all these people. We did a great
read any Ayn Rand?
No, we never got around to that.
That's still much better than
he ran a great political philosophy class where we talked about Plato, we talked about Mill, we talked about Locke, and we talked about Nozick, while also contrasting that with Rawls as well. But I would say, yeah, like through that, just being able to learn how to write academically rigorous philosophical papers, you know, I really felt that I had grown intellectually. I felt like I was sort of an intellectual adult at that point, and I was able to sort of contend with, you know, my more academically advanced peers who might have been in grad school or they were already teaching. I think I had a much better understanding of philosophy in general through that program, so I am grateful for that.
Excellent.
That is great, Peter. I'm very glad you had, you know, I think you had a much better college experience than many college kids do in our day. And Stacey Case reminding us when Obama spoke at Notre Dame, they covered the crosses. I don't even remember that. Jesus.
I do remember, yeah.
Notre Dame is actually our sister school.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm not a devout atheist. I'm not going to defend any religion, but why would Notre Dame cover the crosses when the president, when President Obama spoke there? If they were crescents,
I mean, he would have went, you know, crescent
meaning the symbol of Islam.
Yes.
But
Obama is a real Christian. We know that, right? I mean, he's a real.
Oh, yeah. His pastor, Jeremiah Wright.
He's not an atheist who's in love with Islam. He's a real Christian.
Yeah, and Jeremiah Wright was his pastor, right, who kept proclaiming, not God bless America. No, God damn.
Yeah.
God damn America. But we should be, if people don't, you know the terminology, social justice, we should get a definition, you know, for that term. Excuse me, because when that's put forth by Marxists, I mean, that's a Marxist term. Part of what it means, of course, is that, you know, whites of their very nature oppress non-whites, and you know, so we're all guilty, and consequently, you know, part of what we need to do is redistribute income on a, you know, on a massive scale. We need a massive socialist movement. You know, the Bernie Sanders ilk to redistribute wealth in this country. No matter how hard you work for it, you know,
it's not real justice in the sense that someone who commits actual wrongdoing is punished. It's their idea of injustice is the fact that there are massive disparities in wealth and outcome and ability in the society, and therefore the only way to rectify these injustices is to have massive redistributive policies to create more level playing field, as they would put it, to create equity where people have the same level of income and you basically have equality of outcome, which is both impossible and undesirable.
Yeah, it's massive theft is what it is. I mean, it's communist ideology tricked out, you know, in new terminology. It doesn't matter how hard you worked for your money. Doesn't matter what gender you are or what race, although if you're white, yeah, that's the worst. But, you know, including for black entrepreneurs, you know, who worked really hard and built a business. Herman Cain, remember Herman Cain?
Yeah.
Who was a very, very successful black businessman. It doesn't matter how hard he worked. you know, he's or other people simply have not worked hard, and you know, and that's the main reason why they're poor. We're going to steal, you know, by government coercive power. We're going to steal, you know, a great deal of the money that he's earned, and we're going to distribute it to people who haven't worked nearly as hard as he is. That's a communist idea of social justice. Mm-hmm. Whereas the more rational idea is you have a free society and people work hard, you know, and honestly, and some people are more talented than others, and some people are more hardworking than others, and some people go into fields where the customers have more interest. I mean, doesn't matter how great a philosophy professor I am, I'll never make the money a great baseball player makes because the customers are more interested in baseball than they are in philosophy. All right, it's their money, right? They work for it. They can spend it as they like. But that's real social justice. It means you recognize and respect individual rights. Peter, how often in St. Edward's these days do they even mention individual rights?
Only by, I think, that one libertarian professor, maybe another conservative professor here and there. But that's two people out of, I don't know, 500 different faculty members.
I bet most of the kids don't even know what that term means. They may never have heard it in their life, in their whole educational.
No. Individual rights means you know, right to health care, right to a job, right to food.
That's right.
I did notice, though, once COVID hit and we had the first semester online. Well, no, actually, no, the semester in the fall of 2020 after, you know, where it was an actually full semester of having these Zoom classes. I was just amazed by just how many students turned into absolute bootlickers to the U.S. government. And it goes, you know, to the fact that they don't know anything about U.S. history or the Constitution in the first place.
Right.
I saw one student in one of our discussion groups. I was in a course about the history of infectious diseases and pandemics, and she was saying, yeah, I don't get these anti-mask people. It's like, where does it say in the Constitution that the government can't force you to wear a mask? And it's like, that's not how the Constitution works. The Constitution isn't a set of rules for the citizens that, like, they're not rights that were granted to us by government that, you know, that, oh yeah, we receive from them. No, they're rules set by us to ensure that the government does not violate our rights.
Exactly. Keep the government in check. Absolutely.
Yeah. If it's not listed in the Constitution, then and we have the right to do it.
I'm going to say, Peter, sorry, after last year, after the George Floyd, you know, death, how bad did it get? I'm curious how bad did it get for your school, college, the left-wing teachers? How much worse did they get? How much worse did your fellow students get? I'm just curious if that did happen.
If I think back, since it was all on Zoom, we didn't have the experience of seeing everything that was going on campus. I think if there was no pandemic and it wasn't on Zoom, I think, you know, the university would be staging a lot of actual protests. But come to think of it, I do remember emails from the administration saying, you know, what happened to George Floyd was terrible. This is an example of systemic racism. We need to fight against that. But in the class, none of my classes really touched on that.
Good. Good to hear. I'm surprised, but that's good to hear.
Yeah, pleasantly surprised. Yeah. But go back to the point, you know, that we were discussing before, that I think by this time, the overwhelming majority of American college students either don't know anything about individual rights or only the vaguest inkling of what it is. I'll give you an example, again, without mentioning names. I'm teaching a logic class, and it's a Catholic school, by the way. And well, you know, look at all this logic. Can we put aside 10 minutes at the end of class and debate some topical issue? I said, yeah, that's great. As long as we don't start name calling and everything, you know, as long as we, you know, as we do this rationally. So we did. And, you know, and one of the kids who I really liked, I won't mention his name, but, you know, I really liked this kid. He was a former, you know, he was a U.S. Navy vet, you know, He had seen combat, you know, he put his life on the line for the country. He loved the United States, at least he claimed he did. And he said, you know, we debated the idea that there should be a national military draft, you know, like in Israel. And everybody, get to be 18, you gotta go. You're gonna serve in the US military. Now, this is, you know, this is the kind of nationalism that, you know, Trump's enemies point out that Trump was a nationalist, and you know, and to some degree they're right. He, you know, he was. Nationalism's a form of collectivism. You know, the group over the individual. The country comes first. The nation comes first. The individual exists to serve the nation. That was this kid's attitude. And a number of the kids said, I don't want to serve in the military. I'm studying nursing, and I want to, you know, have a career in nursing. And this guy said, this U.S. military vet said, you know, very self-righteously, he said, too bad, you're going. I said, wait a minute, big guy, you know, time out here. You're waving the American flag, and I'm with you on that. It's the greatest country in the history of the world. What makes it so? The principle of individual rights. You know, what Jefferson, despite being a slave owner, what he wrote in the DOI. Madison, despite being a slave owner, what he wrote in the Bill of Rights. You have an inalienable right to your own life, and what morally legitimizes the government is that it's got to protect those rights. And we need a volunteer military, you know, in that case, because individual has a right to their own life, and they could choose whether they want to serve in the military or not. And I could see, looking around the room, some of the kids' eyes starting to light up. I said, yeah, that's the reason why. I have some vague memory that the Declaration of Independence says that, and, you know, and the Bill of Rights said that. So somewhere along the line, they heard it, but they have not studied American history. They haven't studied the founding period. They don't know, you know, the Enlightenment, 18th century Enlightenment philosophy of the right man, you know, individual rights principle that this country was founded on. They don't know it, and consequently, they're simply disarmed, you know, by this kind of collectivist ideology. In this case, come from the conservatives, from the nationalists. But most of it comes from the socialists, you know, from the leftists. They don't know it. They haven't been taught it. And Peter, is that your experience? I mean, how many students that you knew at either St. Edward's or at the University of Texas, you know, were familiar with the principles of individual rights that the country was founded on?
Pretty much only the conservative students or libertarian students, because they were the only ones.
How many of them were there out of thousands?
Well, that showed up to my meetings, I could count them on one hand. But I definitely talked to students, and I realized that there were a lot more closet conservatives or just closet centrist students that just were too afraid to speak their minds or just didn't think it was worth it. And, you know, in contrast to, you know, them focusing on things they really wanted to study, that, you know, something like if they were, you know, biology and they wanted to become a dentist, they were more focused on that. So,
right. Okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
You mentioned that they don't know these things, and they don't. It's true. They've never been taught this. But, you know, how many of these students, like Peter, have gone out on their own, have educated themselves, you know, in addition to school, gotten books on the founding fathers, gotten books on philosophy, capitalism, you know, American history? Have any of them that you know of, in order to, you know, teach themselves what they haven't been taught by high school, by college, or whatnot? I mean, how many of those have you spoken to where they're still avid readers, regardless? You know, is that a common thing with some of your classmates? I mean, do they learn these things on their own outside of school? Because school is not teaching them, clearly, these things.
I think so. I think you lagged out for a second there, Bosch. I got the beginning of your question. You're asking how many students did I meet that were intellectually curious enough to research
On their own. Okay. Outside of what they're being taught, you know, how many of them have gone out of their way to fill those gaps that school will not teach them?
There are definitely a few, especially in the philosophy class. Generally, those students were like me, intellectually curious and wanted to understand these ideas and study other philosophers that, you know, didn't really cover in class. But, you know, the thing is, though, when I think about it, just these things just aren't discussed. Like, students aren't generally talking about, you know, U.S. history or Constitution, individual rights, because professors don't talk about it in their classes either, for the most part.
Wow.
So, yeah, short answer is not many.
And that's why they don't know. I mean, and they're not taught this, and they're you know, the professors don't want them to know these things either. That's part of it as well. They just don't want them to know what this country actually means, what the founders actually meant, what individual rights are. They won't even discuss that. you know, and that has become quote unquote right wing, right? When you hear these people, like, you know, when they say logic, that's right wing, you know, logic is white.
White supremacist.
Yes. They actually have said this now. It's, I mean, it's dangerous stuff here.
Being Smithsonian now.
I mean, it is just.
Yeah. Well, and it's resuscitating national socialist ideology, because the Nazis used to claim that logic was, you know, Jewish, you know, Jewish prejudice. And, you know, when you start to racialize the method of establishing a conclusion's truth, then of course that's an open attack on critical thinking, on education and the mind. And it is very, very dangerous, because once we've demonized logic as a tool of our enemies, then what are we left with but emotionalism? We just go with our feelings, no matter how violent they are.
And the irony of the claim that logic and objectivity, rationalism are, you know, a white supremacist ploy is that they're actually the antidote to white supremacy, because white supremacy, right, as practiced in the Jim Crow South, was irrational. It was based on this idea that just, well, you know, despite what science tells us and despite, you know, what morality teaches us, you know, black people are subhuman and we're not going to take them equal.
Yeah, right. So I was saying before about, you know, how the claim that all whites are evil by nature or racist by nature. If you've lived, you know, 15 years in this world or less, you've known hundreds, maybe thousands of white people, many of whom are honest people. The theory like that, similar with blacks in the Jim Crow South, these white supremacists knew any number of blacks who were just honest, you know, and trustworthy and hardworking as could be. And so the theory was completely irrational. I mean, it's just completely contradicted any number of directly observational facts, you know, direct evidence. But let me ask you something.
Yes, hypothetical.
So let's say I was a kid, University of Texas. I got up in the class, you know, and the professor's promoting Black Lives. What'd you say? One of the professors said Black Lives Matter is the second, you know, coming of the civil rights movement or something.
Yeah, completely inappropriately in a class that had absolutely nothing to do with our modern political discussion.
All right. So I got up in class, let's say, very rationally, and I'm not, you know, not abusive or, you know, or threatening or anything. I said, I think, Professor, I think, you know, Black Lives Matter is anti-Black lives. They want to defund the police, for one thing. In high crime black neighborhoods, that means the gangbangers are going to be less restrained. It means there's going to be more killings, the gang warfare. There's going to be more innocent people caught in the crossfire between the gangs, and innocent people targeted by the gangs. They murder the children of other, you know, rival gangbangers. Many more blacks are going to die if we defund the police. Rashida Tlaib wants to end the police altogether. She's from Detroit. You know, many more blacks are going to die, and so Black Lives Matter, it's already started. Heather McDonald's documented, you know, how the crime rate's gone up since. Most of the murder victims are blacks. So this is a very anti-black organization. On here, I'm giving evidence to support, you know, my viewpoint. And I say if they really cared about black lives, they would be standing up against by far the gravest threat to black lives, the gangbangers and the thugs who murder 90% of black homicide victims. What was it, a few years ago, the Department of Justice statistics showed that black Americans were 13% of the population and something like 47% of homicide victims and 52% of homicide perpetrators, four times. You know, you want equal representation in society? That's not the kind of representation in society you want.
But they don't want to deal with that.
University of Texas. I'm sorry.
They don't want to deal with that fact. That's a horrific fact. But they just all racist cops. All cops racist, and we're case closed. That's it.
Yeah. Sorry. This is completely hypothetical. There's no way to answer this question definitively. But, you know, the Gallup poll last summer during the height of the George Floyd riots, and George Floyd was murdered. There's no excuse for Chauvin to have his knee on that dude's neck for 12 minutes or whatever it was. You saw the Gallup poll of black Americans, you know, during the height of those riots, 81% said they favored as much or more policing than currently, which makes sense. They recognize the cops are the main danger by far. It's the gangbangers, it's the thugs. So I mean, what if I brought all these facts up in a humanities class, University of Texas? It is hypothetical, but what kind of reaction do you think I might get from the professor or the students who were, you know, we're talking about Black Lives Matter as the revitalization of the civil rights movement?
I think either you would either get a reaction like my professor, where he would honestly engage with you and be respectful, or you could have a situation where my friend asked a question like, what are you comparing capitalism to? And you're decrying it and be told that question is not appropriate. Just evasion.
All right. Well, that's not as bad. That's not as bad as I would have feared. And what I suspect would happen in many classes at, say, Columbia University or a lot of the so-called elite schools, which, you know, are very, very, very dogmatically leftist, where I think the response to my comments there would have been much harsher.
Sorry, Peter, were there explicit teachings of CRT, critical race theory? Were there explicit teachings of basically white supremacism is dominant in our culture, systemic racism, all this crap? Were there, you know, were they shoving this down your throat in the last few years?
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I mean,
in classes that had nothing to do with it, I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, for sure. I mean, talking about how, you know, a lot of it comes out in these non-political classes, just through the professor, you know, in casually inserting some line about how, like, oh yeah, you know, can you believe what Trump said? This is so racist. How dare he do this? You'll also, you know, see in the critical social justice classes that I was taking, it's most prominent in the text we were reading. So we read people like Adolf Reed, Wendy Brown, Kimberly Crenshaw, critical race theorists, and right. Their writings were explicit that, you know, white supremacy animates all aspects of American society. We need equity. You know, income inequality is also an issue that's dividing, that's harming people along racial lines. Talking about the gender inequalities and all this kind of stuff, even when you, you know, protest against that, saying like, well, you know, the wage gap isn't as simple as you're putting it. You're still met with, well, now it still is, and we don't really care about, you know, your response to that.
One thing also, this, if white supremacism was so dominant, right? Let's just say it was dominant, right? Where are the white supremacists pushing back against this? Where are the white supremacist forces shutting down these black individuals who are, you know, these racists pushing against America? Where are they? I'm just curious.
Oh, it's us. You know, anyone who questions them is automatically a racist. That's the Kafka trap that people like Rob D'Angelo are engaging in.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, I'm going to call you a racist. No, I'm not a racist. Oh, you denying that you're a racist just proves that you're a racist.
Absolutely right. That's when there aren't enough white supremacists, all whites are supremacists.
Yeah, you have to expand the definition to meet the criteria. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart.
Exactly right. And that's why they have to teach CRT. Because it's not inherent within our culture. It's not part of our culture. They have to force it. They have to create these subjects, these students who start, you know, explicitly accepting these ideas and pushing these ideas on others around them. Because if it was so widespread, they wouldn't have to go out of their way to shove it down our throats. You know.
Mm-hmm. No, you guys are absolutely right. And you know, it reminds me that, you know, Adolf Hitler used to talk about, he promoted what he called the big lie technique.
All right.
Small lies within the scope of people's cognitive awareness, and they could identify that the claim is at variance with reality, it's false, and it's deliberately false. But if you tell gigantic lies that are beyond the compass of, you know, of people's you know, ability to comprehend, you could get away with it. And that's what white supremacy today, you know, as the boogeyman, as the you know, the Democrats say it's the menace, you know, the major menace in American society, it's the major danger.
Right.
it is gigantic big lie. It's so false. It's so egregiously false that it's ridiculously so. And again, it doesn't withstand 60 seconds of rational scrutiny. But, you know, look at some. Look at what would be the case if this were true. And you're right, Bush. There's 234 million white Americans. White supremacy. We've seen it in action in the Jim Crow South. We've seen burning down black neighborhoods, successful black neighborhoods, Wilmington, North Carolina, and in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the St. Louis area. We've seen the lynchings. The Booker T. Washington staff at Tuskegee Institute had that list. You know, of the most famous lynchings. It was like over 3,600 over roughly an 80-year period. We've seen what white supremacy looks like. Furthermore, we've seen, you know, violent racism in other parts of the world, the Armenian genocide, the Holocaust, the Rwandan genocide. We see what it looks like. 234 million white Americans, if white supremacy were the danger that the leftists say is,
right.
Thank God it isn't. But we'd be seeing mobs burning down black neighborhoods.
It would be bloody. It would be a red America across the board. It would be completely wiped out. And again, they need to. They're counting on the fact that we're not what they say we are. They're counting on to get away with what they're saying. Right. And
Richard Spencer, the leading white supremacist, would be in pig's heaven if this claim were true. He'd have millions of supporters.
He would clamor
violently for a white ethno state. We'd have riots like in Charlottesville 3-4 years ago, where there was a few hundred white supremacists. We have millions of them.
In our culture, you know, the leftist media tried to make him into something. They couldn't do it. They tried. They kept inviting him on. He kept coming on. And after he voted for Biden, they said, "Oh man, we got to get rid of this guy."
And again, the theory just is beyond false. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculously false. I mean, if white supremacy was this powerful force in the United States the way it was 100 years ago, you know, it wouldn't be the case that Indian immigrants had the highest, you know, people of color had the highest, you know, income levels, and Nigerian immigrants have the highest education levels, and and all kinds of Asian groups have higher, income levels. Whites are down the list. None of that would be the case if white supremacy was this powerful force that the leftists claim is. The theory is just false. It's completely false. It's absolutely, it's ridiculously, absurdly false. And yet in various forms, they push it in the school system, the critical race theory and the white privilege. They push it. How strong was it at St. Edward's? Peter, in the years you were there, white privilege, white supremacy, white racism, and so on and so forth.
It was all there. I mean, it's the whole my university was very much dedicated to the idea of pursuing social justice, and that included things like racial injustice, so-called racial injustice. So, you bet they talked about things like white privilege, patriarchy, white fragility. All these kinds of things were openly discussed and taken as if they were fact. I mean, back to your point, Andy, about the big lie. I mean, the other part of the big lie is the fact that if you repeat a statement enough times, then it becomes true, which is what they do. You see, leftists, like on Twitter, for instance, leftists will tweet out these things where it's just like them repeating the same thing multiple times. Like, trans women are women, trans women are women, trans women are women, or Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. So they'll just keep repeating these things in the hopes that people will blindly accept them, regardless if the person espousing this, proposing this, has any hard evidence of it. But
evidence is racist, so,
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
right. And there's, shut up.
What does Ellsworth Toohey say in The Fountainhead? Don't bother to examine, a folly or, right? An absurdity. Just ask yourself what it accomplishes. That's what it accomplishes. It means can't argue against these arbitrary assertions because evidence, you provide evidence and a logical argument that just proves you're racist.
Absolutely. I mean,
this is just irrational. And
it is infuriating.
Gusty. So something else I wanted to, I wanted to say about, about the big lie technique and about white privilege. His privilege, I won't bore you with the psychopathology of my parents, but They were very mixed case. I'm good, and you know, a lot not so good. But yeah, you know, and of course, you know, you don't get a choice about who your parents are, right? Unfortunately. And Peter, you know, you've been in universities recently and a philosophy major. You maybe have read John Rawls' The Theory of Justice. Mm. And he talks about, you know, being behind the making a choice from behind the veil of ignorance. Well, if I could choose, and I think if anybody wants to live a fulfilled and happy life, and I think most Americans of either gender and all races do, where's the real privilege? If the choice was to have black parents and you'll be a black kid to black parents who were really loving and really promoted education, and a lot of black families do, especially the immigrants from Africa and or the Caribbean, or have white parents and be a white kid from parents who weren't all that loving and didn't promote education, I think I'd have a much better life in America as a black kid with loving pro-education parents than as a white kid with unloving, not pro-education parents. There's the real privilege of having parents who are loving and supportive of education. And you know, and that would certainly be my choice, and I mean that literally without any degree of hyperbole, because America is not a racist country anymore, except on the left. The left is racist as hell. It's, all they care about is race. They demonize whites. They're killing blacks. They discriminate against Asians on college admission standards. They're eternally anti-Semitic. The left is permeated with racism. But the non-leftist, non-Democrat Americans, and even a lot of the Democrat rank and file, who just vote Democrat, aren't racist. Most Americans are racist. It's all I call leftists. You know, who are racist. So being black in America, well, I mean, if we can make a choice, and so let's say I'm black and I have a choice of where to live. First place by far, best place to live as a black man or woman is the United States of America. And the proof of that is how few black Americans want to leave this country as expats. There's some, but a small number. And how many blacks from the Caribbean and Africa and other people of color want to come to America? And when they get here, how many stay? And very few leave. So, I mean, you know, every man and every woman are much more rational about what would be good for their lives than Marxist intellectuals. Much more so. The United States is the best place in the world not 100 years ago, but now is the best place in the world to be a black man or woman.
But these arguments that you make, that we're making here, you will be considered a racist for even making an argument. Because if you want to touch their hold on this issue and you want to argue against it, you're racist by nature. That's the idea. That's when they say that logic is white supremacy, because logic destroys them, destroys their whole idea.
If they could put over the big lie. If they could put over the big lie, then we're silenced simply by virtue of our skin color.
Absolutely right.
And any non-whites who agree with us are race traitors. I won't even mention the other terms that leftists,
I know.
Insult them with. And they're silenced. They're silenced.
And what are they admitting about their own ideas and their own thinking process also when they demean logic itself and rationality and reason? What are they saying about themselves? That they don't reason. They don't logic.
They're anti-reason.
They're explicitly anti-reason. When they condemn reason, white supremacists, they're saying we are against reason, is what they're saying.
What did Santayana say? Those who are ignorant of history are doomed to repeat it. No. Who was the massive political movement that demeaned reason and logic and evidence and facts, but for their feelings? It was the National Socialists. They were the most overt anti-rationality, pro-emotionalists, right? We feel in our blood and our bowels our racial superiority. And they are, the current left is one, bringing back that anti-reason Nazi mentality. Two, the pure racism of the Nazis. You're good or bad, depending on what race you're born into. And all they've done is reverse the favored, and disfavored races.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's crackpot left-wing academic theory that no sane person would ever accept. Just on its face, know that this is absurd. But since leftists have pretty much infiltrated every cultural institution in America, they're able to promote this stuff openly without challenge because, you know, all the adults in the room were kicked out.
And now there's a backlash. There's a healthy backlash against it also. If you notice on the on the schools with the parents going up, which is really, it's just great to see. There's passion, yes, there's
very
and there's knowledge.
Very and there's, a lot of
they're going there armed with this. And now, sorry, and the response by the left, there's no such thing as critical race theory. It's just, have you seen that, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, there's no such thing as Antifa either.
It's just this is an idea, man. You know, when they get cornered with their evil, they're like, hey, you know, that's nothing. That's just, you just made that up, you know.
You're right, Bosh. Pete, I was very encouraged to see a number of black parents speaking out against this racist filth. There was that one guy who said, if I'm a victim of racism, how come I have two medical degrees?
Right.
Yeah. No, it's good to see an American backlash again. Well, backlash is the wrong word. You know, Americans standing up against this kind of racist filth.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. I mean, part of me is a little upset that, you know, these people didn't see it earlier. When, you know, people like us were constantly sounding the alarm, being like, look, leftists in the universities are promulgating these horrible ideas and they're spreading. We can see it now in the next generation. They're echoing these ideas. They're going into the corporate world and these ideas are being put into practice. And we're seeing the result of that. And the response was always, oh, you know, just a few colleges, just a few professors, that stuff. Once they get into the real world, they'll realize that, you know, they can't act that way. But no, the real world adjusted to them. And, you know, you realize that where it matters the most is at the local level, where your kids, your young kids are being educated, what they're being taught. And if we ignore that just to win the national election or even the state election, then we're only perpetuating the long defeat.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Pete. This is one reason of several why the left is vastly more dangerous to individual rights and liberty in this country than the conservatives are. And Bosh, you remember when we had the great Jason Hill on the show?
You know, philosophy. Pimpson whores.
What's that, Peter?
Pimpson whores.
Pimpson whores. Yeah, you watched all that episode. That's probably what got us. That's probably what got us deplatformed at YouTube.
Right.
But yeah, he's a philosophy professor at DePaul University in Chicago, and you know, he called the Marxist professors Pimpson whores. You're right. But he made the point very clearly about the difference, he said, about the religious conservatives. As he put it, they're not the ones running amok in the education system and in the universities, brainwashing the kids with racist theory and dogmatizing them and being authoritarian as hell, stifling dissent. It's not the conservatives anymore. Back in the day, you know, they wanted to ban evolution in the schools, and maybe some of them still do. I don't know, but you don't hear them squealing about that anymore. What you hear are the leftists taking over the schools and dogmatizing with, you know, this anti-white racism, and so on, and their Marxist ideology of their social justice theory, where they want to coercively, by brute force, you know, steal tons of money from hardworking people, you know, who've earned it, and give it to people.
Nothing can be left out of their control. That's how, you know, devious they are. That's how diabolical they are. Nothing can be left out of their control. And that's, they want every nook and cranny. I mean, no matter, they've already, you know, they've taken over schools. Now they've taken over sports. I mean, the NFL came out the old day, and, you know, what's it called? That it's gay, right? That is transgender. That football is gay. Football is transgender. I wonder how the NBA will respond to this. I wrote this one thing that these woke whores are trying to outwoke woke whores. That's like the new sport. That's the new sport.
We're going to immortalize Jason Hill. You know, his terminology.
But it's getting really. I mean, again, nothing. They can leave nothing without their claws into it. The left, they can't. They are authoritarian. They have to. They are collectivists. Everything must be controlled. Everything must be poisoned with their touch. Everything, and that's why, I mean, just, you know, these poor students. I mean, you went into college with clearly some ideas that could inoculate you from this, Peter. But some kids just don't. They just get worse. Everything that they've been taught in high school just doubles down in a college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, they think that, oh, just because someone is standing behind a desk and has a bunch of degrees, that they can't be questioned. And, right. You know, everything they say must be true. That's not ever questioned.
I had a student about a year and a half ago, just before everything went online from COVID. I won't mention any names here, but he knew it, he was taking a logic class with me, and he knew from experience by the end of the semester that any idea could be expressed in my class, and I might disagree with it, but I wouldn't yell at anybody. I wouldn't intimidate them. Wouldn't you know, threaten to grade them down. Wouldn't let the other students jump on them, you know, and everybody, the other students could disagree with the one, especially regarding Trump. There might be one or two kids in the class who are Trump supporters, and everybody else is ready to jump on them. And I would say, you know, criticize them rationally, and we'll go back and forth, and the discussion would be very rational. I had one of the students come up to me at the end of the semester, you know, he did it online because we were COVID, but he sent me an email. I said, Dr. Bernstein, I really appreciated that. He said, I voted for Trump. I think Trump is a great president. Everybody in the school hates me. You know, when I talk about it, they'll jump all over me. And you didn't let that happen in your class. I said, look, I got a lot of criticisms. I am a maker of Donald Trump. But a couple of things. One, I think the Democrats are a lot worse than he is. And two, even if you supported the guys I really hate, Bernie Sanders, you know, Omar, the socialists and racists like that, you know, I would still support your right to, you know, to express your ideas, support the rights of the other students to criticize them, but do it courteously and rationally. And, you know, that's what all education should be, and especially higher education, where the kids are not kids anymore. You're 20 years old. They have thoughts. Mm-hmm. At least you would hope so. In some cases, they do. You can't stifle them. It's wrong. And it's the leftists doing that now who are the authoritarians, not the conservatives so much. Bosh, you might have seen this. I saw it on Facebook a few weeks ago. It was some rock star who was saying, I'm shocked, you know, not today, where it's the left that's the, like this right. Nanny state, you know, oversight. Be careful what you say. You can't say this. You can't do that. We're going to jump all over you. And it's the conservatives who are the cool, hip, you know, challenge the establishment.
Who was it? The British. I think the British from The Clash, no?
I don't know. I remember some rock star.
Johnny Rotten said that. Yeah.
Was that okay?
Yes.
Yeah, because back in the day, of course.
A guy from Mumford and Sons praised Andy Grove's book, and he left the band. He left the band, I think, this past week, because, as he put it, he didn't want to bring all that baggage to the band. He loves the band, whatever. But they're coming out a little here and there. These individuals, these famous, who you know, people who have a lot to lose, they're coming out because they're just fed up. They're like, this is too untrue. You know what's going on here? It's just I have to speak out against it. But Peter, what? So we're to...
Well, let me finish the point, because back in the day, this guy was shocked, understandably, because back in the day, the conservatives with their religious premises, they wanted to censor this and censor that. You couldn't say that. You mean, you censor the movie, censor what you could say, right. In rock. And it was the people on the left who were more in favor of, you know, freedom of speech. Say what you will. Now it's reversed. Now the left is going to crucify you for saying anything that clashes with leftist orthodoxy, no matter how rational and evidential you are. And it's the conservatives, if anybody, was going to stand up and say, no, here's the evidence. You know, here's the truth. You know, stand left, for freedom of speech. It's been a complete culture reverse on that.
Yeah, the left are the Puritans today. They are.
Yeah, and the Puritans. Right is that, more, that's what the know. Guy said. That's right. That was the adjective he used, puritanical. That's right. They're not the conservatives who are puritanical anymore, despite their religion. It's the leftists who are puritanical.
It's true.
Many things you simply cannot say. You will be crushed.
And they have a religious fervor about it as well. Atheistic, you know, leftists, but they're full of, you know, religion in their own way. I mean, this whole thing, the CRT, the social justice, it's all feeling, it's all emotion, it's all religion in a lot of ways. It's all
cancel culture. Well, tear down the statue of Thomas Jefferson because he was a slave owner. You know, never mind the fact that he was born in the 1740s when slavery was all over the world and completely unquestioned, and just overlook all the tremendously positive things, the contributions Thomas Jefferson made to the cause of individual rights and personal liberty.
So where do you go from here, Peter, in terms of you're out of school? I know you mentioned you want to write. Would you ever teach? in school.
Yeah, go back into the universities, Peter, be a professor.
Would you do that? Would you have any designs on that?
I don't think I ever want to go back to academia again after that. I think it's a tremendous waste of time. I want to be free to study the things I want to study on my own schedule, and I can do that simply with a couple of books, my notebooks, computer with the internet, and just study all the things that they neglected to teach me all throughout my educational experience, not just college. And you'll be amazed, you already know this, just how much stuff there is to learn that they refuse to teach you in the first place. I am very passionate about education and promoting educational freedom in our society. I think school choice is vital today in order to save education, to save the children from being indoctrinated into these Marxist cults. So I'd love to, you know, look into being part of some advocacy organization that encourages different forms of education, different ways to experiment with education, whether it's online, homeschool, great books, self-directed learning, which is basically what I've been doing my whole life. Hopefully the opportunity for that appears in some way. And I would love to stand up for the kids who can't do it themselves.
No doubt about it. They're being abused.
You know, it's interesting. I think we're seeing a brain drain from the universities. I think you're an example of it, Peter. The same way you see a brain drain from the more politically repressed countries to the freer countries. The United States has always benefited from that. People want to come here, you know, including the educated, you know, the doctors, the engineers, the writers, you know, they want to go to the freer countries where they're free to live their life by their own thinking and express their ideas. And I think we're going to see a similar brain drain from the universities into other professions, and for similar reasons, because the universities have become so authoritarian. In so many of the schools, especially the so-called leading schools, you have to be in lockstep conformity to leftist orthodoxy, or you are in danger of being canceled. You know, and I think you're going to see a lot of people say, bleep this, I'm going to go into a different field. You know, be a scientist or, you know, a doctor or a writer or an independent researcher. I'm not going to have a, you know, university affiliation. I don't want to deal with the dogmatism and the authoritarianism and, you know, having to look over my shoulder every time I say something that might clash with leftist dogma. I think we're going to see a brain drain. You know, I think we probably already have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think people are also realizing that aside from the political issue with universities today is the fact that universities just aren't teaching any practical applicable skills for their career. You know, they don't really teach sales, marketing, copywriting. They don't send you out to actually start a business yourself. A lot of this stuff can be done, you know, at home, self-taught, without having to spend $50,000 and going into tremendous debt,
right,
which is the other problem, affordability, and the fact that this bubble at some point is going to burst. I mean, it's just inevitable. It's not sustainable to last in the future.
Let me ask you a question. Here's, again, hypothetical question, Peter. So I recently, for the first time in my life, registered as a Republican. I've been independent, you know, all my life. But the Democrats, I think, have been taken over by the leftists. And they're just so evil that I have to fight them in every way possible. And the Republicans, for all their lack of brains and backbone, they're not evil. They don't hate America the way the Democrats do. And they're the only ones who have a realistic chance to defeat them in national elections. So let's say I go on campus soon, you know, in August, later, a little less than 2 months, your semester starts. And I'm going to openly proclaim to the faculty and the students, I'm a Republican, guys, and I'm going to be, you know, supporting Republican candidates and everything. I'm going to go, and I'm against, I'm going to go everything I can to defeat the Bernie Sanders and the Ilhan Omars and the AOCs. How do you think that's going to go over on the college campus? What do you think? Any guess? I know this is complete guesswork. Cause,
you besides know, being lynched?
Some campuses, especially like, you know, I teach at a Catholic school or formerly Catholic school. St. Edward sounds like it's much less bad than many of the secular schools. What do you think, Peter? You think the faculty and other students will be welcoming to this newly minted Republican faculty member?
No. I think you'll have some people who will, in private, pat you on the back, be like, hey, Professor Andy, I like that. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think they will.
There will regardless be- of the reaction, I think you should do it anyway, because at this point, there's no longer any time to be silent and hide behind false personas
right.
in the hopes of preserving your career or your social circle. I mean, this is the last stand. The left is out to cancel us, to eventually destroy us, destroy our lives, our livelihoods, our children's future.
You're absolutely right. When
either you make a stand now and risk it all on the line, or you're dead. Because the next thing that's going to happen is the gulags. I mean, Stefan Molyneux made a great point. He was saying cancel culture is dress rehearsal for mass murder, because once the communists get in charge, when they cancel you, you die.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. This is natural. This is the natural root of leftism. It goes to bloody murder, literally. That's where it goes. It doesn't stop at cancel. It keeps going until bloody murder, mass murder.
You're absolutely right, guys. And when Chairwoman AOC is premier of this country, 10, 15, 20 years from now, because I may not even be here by then anyway. But if I am, I'm gonna get dragged off to a gulag no matter what. Mm. So, what Ayn Rand say? She wasn't brave enough to be a coward, or something like that. Yeah, I'm not brave enough to remain silent. And not fight this push towards gulags, which is where the left always goes. Whether it's National Socialism, Nazis, they're collectivist socialists as anybody, pushing for extermination camps, or whether it's the communists. And the contemporary American left is a mixture of both. They've integrated so much race war now into their class war ideology that there is National Socialists in reverse, reverse the favored and disfavored racial groups, but they're a race war. That's the essence of National Socialism, that race war is the force that drives forward social history. And they've incorporated a great deal of National Socialism into their Marxist philosophy. They are really dangerous. And they're going to push eventually for gulags. They're already calling for re-education camps for Trump voters. Mm-hmm. They openly called for that after the election, including AOC, who's a member of Congress. So, the author of the Capitalist Manifesto, if I try to hide now, it's too late. I'm going to be dragged off to the gulag. So if I'm going to be dragged off to the gulag, I'm going down swinging. I'm going to fight these bastards to the death.
Absolutely. There's no choice. They are at war with us. It's a cultural war at this point. It's a cultural war. We have to fight culturally. And now if it goes physical, then that's just, that's just the way it is. But it's a cultural war. It has to be fought, at every level. And the right is not doing it. A lot of them are just, sitting back and, pretending that this is just, business as usual. It's not. The left has gone full blown left. And the end game, again, is death and destruction. That's the end game. And again, we saw a little glimpse of it last year. 8 months of 42 people were murdered. 42 human beings were murdered. Billions of dollars lost, damages. I mean, this is just, and that was a strategically planned, terrorist riot, whatever you want to call it, for 8 months. And then after the election, it stopped cold, I mean, that's not by accident. It stopped cold after the election. They said, okay, we did our part. We made life so bad for Americans that they said, we need someone else. We need someone else, even though that, we discussed it, the election and the fraud involved. But,
Well, this is scary stuff. And Peter, you put it very nicely. Cancel culture is not the end. It's the beginning. Mm-hmm. The end game is not just cancel your career, it's cancel your life.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
So, I wrote on Facebook the other day, I'm going to be like a Paul Revere of social media, chanting as loud as I can, the leftists are coming, the leftists are coming. You're going to stand up and support freedom of speech and individual rights and personal liberties, or are you just going to let yourself, be enslaved by... the Democratic Party is not communist yet, but I don't think it's more than 10 or 20 years away. They've been trending in this direction for a long time. 20 years ago, Bernie Sanders wouldn't have had the traction that he had today. And AOC is in her 30s, right? She's young. And said to the Democratic Party, and he's right. She is. And she 10, is. 20 years from now, they will be calling for the nationalization of industries, the abolition of private property. They've been trending in that direction for a long time. Anybody disagrees with them, is in danger of being dragged off to a re-education camp that they're already calling for.
She's openly said that capitalism is an unredeemable system. Mm. What do you think is her proposed solution to that, if not full-blown socialism?
Right.
Well, Bernie Sanders and AOC, who's just a little clone, you know, of Comrade Bernie, they're very clear. You know, they're, and I don't even think the socialism they're looking for is the semi-socialism of Sweden. I think they're pushing us towards the full socialism of Venezuela.
Absolutely, there's no doubt about it.
I mean, look, those are the people they praise.
They are smearing their political opponents as terrorists and racists. I mean, they're smearing them, and it's not just some hack on the street. It's the Biden administration officially on record calling out our greatest threat is quote unquote white supremacism. By that, it's just code for their opponents, period. And they're smearing their opponents as terrorists, meaning murderers, meaning they can do anything against them if they're murderers, right? If they're terrorists, right? I mean, shouldn't they be able to do anything against terrorists?
You know, and we're getting to this. This has been a great discussion. It's almost time for us to wrap it up. But I was thinking, Bosch, we need to get more information. The government needs to release more information on the January 6th riots at the
Capitol. They are refusing to, but yes, they have.
They've been holding back too much.
Sorry, Andrew, the insurrection, okay? The armed insurrection, don't forget, okay? Yeah. Armed. Oh, sorry, there were no arms. The only person who was killed was
someone who was not armed.
Exactly.
An insurrection is a closely related term to revolution or rebellion. This was a riot.
Yes.
But we need more data, and then we need to discuss this. You know, what really happened? What's the full truth of what happened? So, you know, the
Capitol. Did you hear about the 20 individuals who were allowed to go free? Because the word is that they were probably FBI agents or worked with the FBI to some extent to cause some kind of ruckus.
Yeah, I've heard that. But we're not, you know, mindless ideologues. We want evidence. You know, we're objective here. We want evidence. So, I mean, it may be true. The FBI, there's no doubt the FBI has become lefticized. Well, if I
can. One thing also, sorry. So just one thing, just personally, Tucker Carlson had for two nights in a row, he mentioned the Garland attack that I was involved in, where the FBI agent was with jihadists, working with them, right? Tell him, he was undercover as a Muslim. He said, tear up Texas. He was at the actual event with a car in front of the jihadists. As soon as they got out of the car, he drove off. Meaning the FBI wasn't going to allow Americans to be wiped out. They were going to allow it. They wouldn't have stopped it. They were going to allow it to make it happen. That tells you right there that, you know, there's something really evil going on where maybe they wanted something to happen. And they say, see, we can't have individuals going out there against Islam and, you know, drawing Muhammad. And look what happens. This is just my assumption based on that.
You could be right.
She was arrested two blocks away, but it was three blocks away, and they showed a picture of it, which I never saw before until last week, and they blurred out his face. I'm thinking, you know, is he actual Muslim? I don't know.
But
the point is that the FBI has been in some dirty business, and I wouldn't encourage them
it's really distressing because the FBI, you know, under J. Edgar Hoover, whatever Hoover's flaws, you know, and you know, weaknesses, and you know, and moral, you know, moral problems. Hoover loved America, and you know, the FBI was the, you know, during the Roosevelt administration and the Truman administration, when, you know, we know today how deeply Soviet agents had penetrated the U.S. government. FDR dismissed it. Even Harry Truman, to some degree, was an anti-communist. Even Harry Truman, to some degree, dismissed it and hated Joe McCarthy. But Hoover was watching. The FBI was watching. The FBI was gathering data on Soviet agents. I believe, if I go back to Blacklisted by History, M. Stanton Evans' great biography of McCarthy, I think it was the FBI that was feeding McCarthy information on who the Soviet agents were. But I have to double check. I don't remember that for sure. But the FBI was definitely patriotic and doing everything they could to protect America from the communists.
I've been in contact.
I don't know that that's true. How many hours of footage?
I don't know. How many
footage U.S. government withholding?
Something ridiculous. I forgot what it was, but they have a lot that they're not releasing because, again, it will undercut their story.
Yeah, we need to pry this out of them. Somebody needs to. Freedom of Information Act. right? Freedom of Information Act. We need to see that security footage from the Capitol.
Again, they were in single file. A lot of them, this riot, they were in single file. A lot of them walking through the Capitol. It wasn't some outrageous thing. And cops, the security guards were letting them in. They were letting them in. Yeah. Come on, guys. Come on, guys. It's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? The whole point was that
they say they want to investigate it. The Democrats are pushing this, like, we need an investigation to put a stop to this, white insurrectionism. They're only doing that to distract from the real threats coming from the violent left. So, 100%. When you look back at the summer of 2020, you see BLM and Antifa burning down entire cities, destroying businesses of mostly black people in those inner city neighborhoods.
Government buildings, right?
Investigation of this that to the level of scrutiny we're seeing against the January 6th riot. No.
Yeah,
not at all. Because
the riots in Charlottesville three, four summers ago was the Klan and was the American Nazis. Those dudes are white supremacists. Yeah. I don't know that there were any white supremacists, at the Capitol riot. This is leftist, just lying endlessly that Trump's a white supremacist and his base are white supremacists. That's just false.
Yes.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine who's very intelligent and an Ayn Rand, not an objectivist, but an Ayn Rand supporter. He was, he reads the New York Times, and he was shocked when Trump declared the Klan a terrorist organization. He said, I can't get my head around it. I said, you can't get your head around it because you're sucking up the lies from the New York Times that Trump's a white supremacist and his supporters are white supremacists. That's all false. That's completely false. The Republicans are white supremacists now, and they never have been. The Democrats.
He should have listed BLM as well, but it could be, look, KKK, BLM, same crap, same party also, same party. Okay, from the KKK to the BLM. Anti-black, now they're anti-white. It's the same thing. It's just racism then, racism now. There's no difference. Yeah,
and their anti-white racism is overt. It's their Democrats and the leftist anti-black racism.
Exactly. That's covert. Exactly.
Deadly to thousands of black Americans every year.
There's no doubt about it.
They're brilliant, aren't they? At concocting this scheme.
They're diabolical.
Yeah, the left is evil. Diabolical. So I can say over and over again, religious conservatives and even Trump are a mixed case. The left is evil.
Yep, and the conservatives a lot of times suckers for it. They are absolute suckers. They have to step it up, but they haven't. But let's see how this goes, because the left is not going to stop. They're going to keep going further and further and further. That's what they do. That's their nature. So we'll see what happens.
Peter, been a great guest. Great to have you on the show. I don't want to sound like Bill O'Reilly, but he's not as bad as a leftist, right? you want the last word? You have any last comments for warnings for bright young kids going into the universities, or for parents who are gung-ho on their kids going to university, think they're going to get an education there? Any insight, advice, comments you want to make to wrap it up? Put a nice little bow on this package.
Don't go. It's not worth your time or your money. It's not worth being told that the color of your skin and what's between your legs makes you a horrible person, that your masculinity, your identity is toxic, that you are a threat to people just by the mere fact of your existence. It's not worth spending thousands of dollars to get a degree that won't prepare you for any high-end job. I would suggest going to trade school, doing 2 years of community college, or just looking into getting a real job in the beginning, and or start your own business. And if you're a parent, don't send your kids to school. Definitely encourage a program like Praxis, which is started by pro-liberty-minded people who actually prepare kids for the real world, whether it's getting a job or starting a business, and even down to grade school level. If you notice the CRT stuff popping up in your school, if you can't win at the school board level, then pull your kids out of there. It's better to drain the beast of its power than try to change its mind to reform it.
Well said, Pete. I absolutely agree with you. I'm a college professor, so I'm, taking away business from me, and I won't have many classes to teach. So, but it would be a step in the right direction. And I want to close with that your sisters. So I assume your family's Armenian. Your ancestors, of course, in the Ottoman Empire, just a little more than 100 years ago, were butchered by the Turks, the Armenian genocide, which nobody in the United States is even aware of. were butchered, at least a million Armenian, innocent Armenian civilians butchered by the Turks, partly, you know, Muslim Christian slaughter, but other reasons involved too, but were slaughtered largely just because of their ethnicity. And as soon as you demonize an ethnic group, whether it was the Armenians, you know, in the Ottoman Empire, or the Jews in Europe, or now it's the whites, the purpose of that is race war and slaughter. It's going to be harder in the United States because they're demonizing the majority, whereas, you know, the Armenians were a minority in the Ottoman Empire and the Jews were a minority in Europe. It's going to be harder. Nevertheless, there's the end game, is race war and class war. Where that is the end game. So I think you're doing your ancestors proud here, Peter. I mean, you know, we're not collectivists here, but still, how do you honor the dead who were murdered because of ethnicity, because of racism? You stand up for individual rights and against racism in any of its forms.
Yeah, well, I've always hated bullies, whether they're in the schoolyard, they're teachers, they're politicians, or jihadists. My great-grandfather came to this country with only his two baby sisters after seeing his whole entire family slaughtered. And I think...
In Turkey? They were killed in Turkey during the Armenian genocide?
Yep. And the best way to honor that memory is to never give in to that and vow to always stand up to ideologues and supremacists and those who wish to control others.
Stand up for inalienable individual rights of every individual human being and oppose racism in any of its hideous iterations, whether it's directed against minorities, majorities, or anybody, you know, or anybody in between.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. Thanks for coming on, Peter. Great talk. For the inside look of what's going on, because we have our own ideas about what's going on in today's colleges, but you gave us some good inside views on that. So I appreciate it. Thanks.
Pleasure is all mine, guys. Such an honor, such a privilege to be talking with you guys. And
thank you, Peter. I wanted to
appreciate
say,
it. Appreciate it.
You're 22, is that right? How old are you?
24.
24. You are a very talented, very intelligent young man. I mean, you are wise and articulate way beyond your 24 years. So I hope, you know, I would think that in a semi-rational, semi-free society, your future is very bright, Peter. So, you know, I'm very happy for you. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot, Andy.
Have a good night, everybody out there in Freedom of Speech Land. Bosch Foster and I will be back again next week to discuss some other controversial topic. You know, there was some website during the Iraq war. I still think Bush invaded the wrong country. You know, Iranian regime was the real danger, not the Iraqi regime. But there was some website supporting the U.S. I certainly supported the U.S. military, who were, you know, risking their lives. There was some website, I don't remember the name of it anymore, but their motto was fighting the left, doing it right. You know, so I'm going to steal their tagline. You know, we'll be fighting the left, doing it right, and we'll fight the conservatives too at times because they deserve it. But we know they're not nearly as bad. But we'll be back with some other controversial topic next week, and we will get to the riot, you know, the January 6th riot. We want to need more evidence. We need more, you know, information pried out of the freedom under the Freedom of Information Act, perhaps pried out, you know, from the U.S. government to get some more evidence, and we can really dig into this about white supremacy and the dangers, you know, to our constitutional republic and so on and so forth. But we'll be back next week. Everybody out there in Freedom of Speech Land, thanks for tuning in. Like us on Rumble. After we got deplatformed on YouTube after about 5 or 6 episodes, you know we're doing something right. That only took us 5 or 6 episodes to get deplatformed from
that
YouTube.
That was a record as far as I know.
Well, one, we challenged the leftist narrative that there was an honest election. Two, Professor Jason Hill was just outspoken regarding Marxist intellectuals. We hammered the AGW hypothesis in our show on climate change. That any or all of those be enough for the
abolishing government
YouTube to
abolishing government schools. That was
he had Robert Spencer on too.
That's right. We had Robert Spencer on to discuss the evils of and dangers of Islam. Well, we're going to keep it up, guys. Like us on Rumble, you know, and we're going to expand the show. We want to get a wider audience. People need to hear this, and there's not enough people out there on social media saying what you and I are saying, Bosh, and having guests on like Peter Seferian.
Excellent. Thanks.
All right, guys, everybody. Have a good night, everybody.
Great talk.
See you next week. This is the special Colorado edition, you know, of Truth in Politics, and signing off next week. We'll be back in my underground bunker in New York. So, have a good night, everybody. Talk to you soon.